The views and opinions expressed on this program are not necessarily those of this station, JVC Broadcasting Management, or its sponsors.
Well, hi, this is Ken Auerbach from Cartier Bernstein Auerbach and Steinberg. If you or someone you care for has been injured from no fault of their own, please contact Cartier Bernstein Auerbach and Steinberg at myinjuryli.com or call 631-654-4900. Whether auto or work-related, slip and fall, trip and fall, construction accidents, dog bite, medical malpractice, or nursing home neglect, or various other types of negligence, please contact me at Cartier Bernstein Auerbach and Steinberg by visiting me at myinjuryli.com or call 631-654-4900. I will represent you with integrity and passion. Living in pain from no fault of your own can be emotionally and physically detrimental and affect all aspects of your life. Please contact me, Ken Auerbach, at Cartier Bernstein Auerbach and Steinberg by visiting myinjuryli.com or call 631-654-4900 for an immediate and free consultation and the support and representation you deserve. Well, hi, everyone. This is personal injury attorney Ken Auerbach from Cartier Bernstein Auerbach in Steinberg. Welcome to our program, From No Fault of Your Own. It's really so great to be here with you. As you know, it's our goal to give you an insider's view of bringing and proceeding with various types of personal injury actions caused by the negligence of some other party. Among these areas that we will explore are car accidents, trip and slip and falls, construction accidents, medical malpractice, nursing home neglect, products liability, and the serious injuries that often do occur. And through our journey together, we are hoping that we have removed some of the mystery and uncertainty and help you feel both empowered, knowledgeable, and really confident in the process. And we're also hoping that through this process, if you do have a situation that you've been injured, someone close to you has been injured, that you'll give us the privilege of trying to see if we can help you with it, trying to work you through the process of it, trying to get you justice. We are live today, so if you have any questions, you can call the studio at 631-451-1039. That's 631-451-1039. I don't have my co-host here with me, Amanda Spinner, but I know that she's listening, so we have to have a really good show here, folks, so we can hopefully impress Amanda. So have really good news to start the program. I'm got to tell you, I'm really happy. One of my friends who was very concerned about his healthcare issues actually just got some great news. And he's a person that had had cancer, and you know, there's some real concerns. It turned out everything is perfect. It's great. And I told him, I said, it's sort of like what Mark Twain said, the rumor of your death was greatly exaggerated. So I'm just half joking around. I'm only joking because I'm so happy for him. So glad that he's going to be doing well. I just told him I was going to give him a 30-year warranty, 30, 35 years, so that if anything happens to him, his family could come back and I'll reimburse it for any of their losses. But I did tell him I don't like to pay out on warranties. So really, really great news, and he's doing great. And my friend with the first name starting with a D, you know how excited I am. So let's talk today about an area that we haven't really covered. It's called products liability. And what that has to do with, it has to do with products. And when you think of a product, it could be many different products. It could be a medical device. It could be, I've had them wear a balloon pump. It could be a vehicle. It could be just anything pretty much you could think of. And the law allows in the state of New York for recovery if one is injured for a defective product. Now, let's talk a little bit about the nature of those actions. Well, there's two types, main types of actions when it comes to product defects. One is a manufacturing defect. So think of a manufacturing defect as there's a product, it's in the factory. Let's say it's a tire, and they make these tires, and the tires turn out not to be made properly. Maybe they didn't use the right consistency in the rubber. Maybe the metal that they put in there was defective in some way. But what happens is they make this product, they put it out into the industry, or they put it out, obviously, into the public, and someone takes this product, they have it on their vehicle, let's say if it was a tire, and they go to drive, and that tire explodes, and they lose control of the car, and they can have a catastrophic injury, terribly sometimes it could result in a death. And that's a scenario where you had a defective product. And the person's claim in that situation would be, if it was them and they survived it, would be that the product that they were sold was defective. Okay, it was not reasonably safe, it wasn't made properly, and that it caused them injury, or in the worst situation where their estate has to bring an action saying that it caused their death. Each of those cases have to be analyzed very, very carefully. Simply because something goes wrong with a product doesn't mean it's defective. But each case has to be looked at very carefully. Now, if you take the same scenario, let's say we have a scenario with a tire, and let's say that, well, it was done correctly or put together right in the factory, but there was a design defect. And what do we mean by that? Well, when the engineers were figuring out what the right type of material that should be used with this tire, or whether it's the metal, whether it's the rubber, they did not calculate it properly. That there was something that wasn't taken into account. So it was manufactured according to specs and it was correct, but the design of it somehow was not good. Now, we have those cases. Those cases, again, in order to prove that there's a design defect, is one has to look at, well, what was the, in the industry at that time, what was the knowledge base that existed? What was reasonable to do at that time, how to design it? And did they, in fact, use that? Were they aware of the fact that it could have been done a different way? So those are the two ways that you can think of a design manufacturing defect. But that goes for really any type of product. We also have electronic products. So let's say it's not a tire. Let's say it's a baby monitor. Let's say it could be, and I've seen these cases, an MRI machine. And I've actually had them where an MRI machine went awry, that the person in the MRI machine actually got burned. And in those cases, one again has to go ahead and be able to prove that. Now, how do we prove it? Well, people call us up and they'll say, well, I was injured by this product. Does that automatically mean that the product was manufactured defectively, designed defectively? And the answer is no. We have to look at each product on its own. Typically, what we'll do is once we screen the call, I have experts that I've worked with. In fact, we're going to have one of them on the show today, and he's going to be fascinating because we're going to learn about how does an expert analyze if a product is defective, if it's manufactured defectively or was manufactured defectively, if it was designed defectively. And it really is fascinating because you learn a lot about a lot of different things. So what I do at that point is once I screen it and it looks like, yeah, it could be a case, I then want to get a hold of an expert. I want to get a hold of somebody who in that industry, in that particular area of product, has knowledge and is able to assess what happened here. How did it happen? Why did it happen? Did it happen because the product itself was built improperly? In other words, it was designed properly, but it was not manufactured properly and therefore was defective and caused serious injury? Or did it happen because, well, it was designed properly. I'm sorry, well, it was manufactured properly, but they designed it wrong. They didn't take certain things into account that they should have otherwise done at that time. Knowledge base, there was a knowledge base that something should be done differently. It wasn't. And you see this in all different areas. We've had them in car seat cases. We've had them in booster seat cases. We've had them in electronics area. But I can tell you that these cases have to be analyzed carefully. They are very expensive sometimes to litigate. We have to hire experts. We have to hire people who have been involved in the industry in that area. And, of course, they want to get paid for their time. Oftentimes, we have to make sure that the product, if we can, is retained. In other words, that the product isn't destroyed. So if you have a car case and there's a problem with a car, a defect in the braking system, the steering system, it could be, again, in the tires, you want that maintained. You want that retained. You do not want that to be destroyed because now you're at a great disadvantage. How do you otherwise prove that that product was defective? So those are some of the thoughts just to get you started on it. We're going to be very fortunate today. We have Dr. Joseph Dyro. And Dr. Joseph Dyro is going to tell you about himself. And he has a PhD in biomedical electronics engineering. He's a doctor that that I've worked with. And I can tell you, it really has been fascinating, because a lot of times what will happen is I'll bring him in, I'll say something went wrong here, and then I then watch his analysis. And I watch how he figures out, it's like Sherlock Holmes, whether something was defective, whether it wasn't, whether it's a manufacturing defect and a design defect, where he's able to come with a lot of information and say, well, this information was available when they were designing this product, but they just decided to ignore it. Things like that. So we're going to be back on the other side. We're going to have Dr. Joseph Dyer on the show. And I think you're going to be fascinated, because I am always fascinated when I talk to Dr. Dyer, when I learn about different products and defects and how we can protect the public and certainly get remediation and remuneration for my clients that are hurt. We'll see you on the other side. Well, welcome back to our program. If you're just joining us, this is personal injury attorney Ken Auerbach. You're on our program From No Fault of Your Own. We are live and we are exploring the most important issues in personal injuries caused by accidents. If you'd like to call into the studio, you can call. We'd love to answer your questions regarding any type of personal injury matter. You can call 631-451-1039 at 631-451-1039. Don't be shy. And if you do call in, you'll get one of our great From No Fault to Your Own t-shirts, personally designed by my partner, Rob Steinberg. And they really are cool t-shirts. And if you or someone you do care about has been injured as a direct result of someone else's negligence, please contact us at myinjuryli.com or call 631-654-4900. That's myinjuryli.com or call 631-654-4900. It would be my privilege to fight to get you justice. That's myinjuryli.com or call 631-654-4900. All of our consultations on personal injury cases are always free. And if we are retained, the case is always on a contingency. It means you don't pay us anything unless we make a recovery for you. Please also listen to our program every Monday from 4 to 5 p.m. as we explore these issues. So today we are fortunate to have Dr. Joseph Dyer on the program. And we're going to talk about products liability, defective products, and all kinds of things relating to that. Dr. Dyer, are you there?
I am here.
Well, so good to have you here with us, Dr. Dyer. I've had the good fortune, Dr. Dyer, as you know, of working with you on some cases over the years. And I find it fascinating when I'm working with someone like yourself in this area, because I learn a lot about a lot of different things that I really had no idea about. And what I always found great working with you, Dr. Dyer, is you're able to go ahead and explain some very complicated concepts very simply. And that's what we're going to hope that we do today, so I can understand it and our listeners can understand it and understand a little bit more about products liability, bringing cases, what does one have to do, how does one have to analyze it. And so let's get started. Let's talk a little bit about yourself. You just give us a little background in your education background.
Okay. Before we get into that, let me just say thank you so much for having me on here. You are a great lift to me, because I've never heard so many good things about me as I have when you made the introduction. So thank you very much for that. And I must say that I just ran down to my hat collection and put on my houndstooth Sherlock Holmes cap, just so that you can kind of get, if we're on TV, you would see me, the real investigator.
Well, see, now we're on to something here now. Now we're on to something. You got your Sherlock Holmes hat. And
absolutely.
So give us a little bit of your educational background and tell us, you know, what your degrees are in. And when we call you Dr. Dyer, what does that actually mean?
Okay, let me start with my education. It began with blocks that my godmother gave me at 2 years of age. It progressed to Lincoln Logs, up to a Rectoset. And so I was always building stuff. So I figured, I sent 10 cents away to the Kellogg Company to get a thing on the fort you carve when I was a little kid. And I always, and I said, well, what am I going to do when I grow up? And then I had this appendix thing, and I almost died at 11, you know, peritonitis. I wound up in the hospital, and I said, wow, look at all this cool stuff, and they're saving my life. They're giving me all this stuff, and I met Gene Autry, and this is great. And so what I did was say, can I combine engineering with medicine, with medical devices, and I thought I can. There was a growing specialty in this field where medical devices needed to have good engineering to make them work and make them safe and effective. So I decided, well, I better go to school, and I didn't know where to go to college, you know. So I asked my sister, who was a second year sophomore at MIT, and she said, well, I go to MIT. It's a good school. Why don't you go there? Okay, so I applied, and I went to MIT, and they had all these courses in what they called then biomedical or biophysics and engineering biophysics and communication biophysics. This is great. They're talking as engineers, and they're looking at things like the auditory system of, well, actually, I specialize in auditory system of bats. But it gave me a chance to start doing experiments and learning how to scientifically examine the body using engineering principles. And so after my Bachelor's of Science degree from MIT, I went to the University of Pennsylvania, and they had the very first course, the very first curriculum in biomedical engineering. And I was so blessed to be the first person, along with my colleagues, to be in the first class of this new discipline called biomedical engineering.
And what is that? What is that for our listeners?
Well, what is that? We call it the application of engineering techniques and systems to the study of medical of the body. For example, take the heart. For example, you can model the heart by electronic components. You can study the heart because the heart is activated by electrical impulses, and so there's a way of studying the body by using equations and mathematics and using scientific principles. The bone is another example. The bone is a hard, cancellous structure that is filled with cells, but it reacts to stress and strain. So using mechanical engineering techniques, one can measure the strength of the bone and work on things like prostheses and ways by which you can strengthen a bone, or if a bone is broken, you can fix it. So using engineering to help with understanding the human body, using engineering to provide ways by which you can help a human body that is ailing or suffering from something. Take, for example, pacemaker. Your heart's not beating properly. Okay, so what do? Well, you make this little gadget and a little thing, and it basically goes into the body, and you get some wires, and you attach it to the heart, and the pacemaker actually sends an electrical signal to the heart, pacing the heart, making the heart beat on a regular basis. So that would be one example of what biomedical engineering can bring us.
So that's fascinating. That if you think about it, right? There's this area, right? Essentially, of a combination of medicine and engineering has really exploded, I guess, since you really kind of got into it, really. As a kid, you're doing erector sets, and the next thing you know, right, you're in an area where a lot of the things that we only imagined that could be invented and used, pacemakers, right? There wasn't any such thing, I guess, probably until maybe the 60s?
Pacemakers, defibrillators, a lot had to do with this marvelous invention that I first encountered when I was at MIT in the first electrical engineering course that I had, taught by Amar Gopal Bose. You may have had a Bose speaker or a Bose headphones. He was my professor. It was so stimulating to be there with the great people teaching you. And the transistor just was coming out at this time. Now, the transistor was a remarkable device that enabled us to do the miniaturization of things and to start building these electronic devices that could be used to to monitor a patient in a hospital. You could use these transistors to make heart monitors and monitors that would measure your ventilation or your blood pressure. And so that was really the start of the development of medical devices. Was sort of in the 50s and the 60s.
Well, that's that's fascinating. So we're going to have to get to a commercial break, and we're going to be bringing the great Dr. Joe Dyro back, and we're going to talk about different devices. How does one analyze them for purposes of making sure they're good for the human being, first and foremost, and then analyzing, too, as to whether or not maybe there's a defect, and maybe if that caused injury or caused death, how do we make a recovery for that? So we will be back on the other side. Dr. Dyro, just hang in there. Thanks so much for coming on with us. Well, hi, this is Ken Auerbach from Cartier Bernstein Auerbach and Steinberg. If you or someone you care for has been injured from no fault of their own, please contact Cartier Bernstein Auerbach and Steinberg at myinjuryli.com or call 631-654-4900. Whether auto or work-related, slip and fall, trip and fall, construction accidents, dog bite, medical malpractice, or nursing home neglect, or various other types of negligence, please contact me at Cartier Bernstein Auerbach and Steinberg by visiting me at myinjuryli.com or call 631-654-4900. I will represent you with integrity and passion. Living in pain from no fault of your own can be emotionally and physically detrimental and affect all aspects of your life. Please contact me, Ken Auerbach, at Cartier Bernstein Auerbach and Steinberg by visiting myinjuryli.com or call 631-654-4900 for an immediate and free consultation and the support and representation you deserve. Welcome back to our program. If you're just joining us, this is personal injury attorney Ken Auerbach. You're on our program From No Fault of Your Own, and we are live where we're exploring the most important issues and personal injuries caused by accidents. If you or someone you care about has been injured as a direct result of someone else's negligence, please contact us at myinjuryli.com or call 631-654-4900. We would be privileged to fight to get you justice. That's myinjuryli.com or call 631-654-4900. And all of our consultations on personal injury cases are free. If you do retain us, we are working on a contingency. That means you don't pay us anything unless we make a recovery for you. If we do not make a recovery, then it does not cost you anything. And please listen to our program every Monday from 4 to 5 p.m. as we continue to explore these issues. Our consultations, as I've told you in the past, we meet you at home if you want. We can go to a medical facility, one of our offices, whether it's our Patchogue office, which is our main office, or throughout Nassau and Suffolk County, one of the five boroughs. We'd be glad to do that, and we will make appointments that work with your schedule. So we are back with the great Dr. Dyro. Before we do that, I just want to give a shout out to the man behind the glass, my producer here, Anthony Barone. He really does an amazing job here, guys. And if it seems like the program does flow smoothly, it's really 99.9% of what he's doing there. So we do appreciate you, Anthony, and thanks for that. I know you're behind the glass. You don't get to talk, but I get all the talking, but Anthony does most of the work. So we are back on our show here. We have Dr. Dyro. Dr. Dyro, are you there?
I am here.
All right, so let's get back to talking about biomechanical engineering. And so could you tell us some of the products over the years that you've been involved with in analyzing these products, whether the and for what purposes?
Yeah, so this is just a continuation of what I began to discuss earlier when I got my first job after graduating with a PhD from the University of Pennsylvania. And by the way, that's a PhD in biomedical engineering. The first job I had was working for a company called ECRI, which was analogous, a new company, New company, nonprofit laboratory, analogous to like Ralph Nader's Consumers Union that published consumer reports. And this company that I work for, instead of evaluating Maytag dishwashers, they evaluated defibrillators. They evaluated heart machines. They evaluated infant incubators. And so I said, this is great. Now, why are they evaluating these things? Turns out, as I said earlier, the transistor came on the market and manufacturers began to make many medical devices. But the problem was that at the time that they began to make all of these devices in the 60s and the early 70s, there were no standards for design, no standards for performance, no standards for safety. They were just at their, manufacturers were at their, liberty to make whatever they could make, thinking that it would work. Well, what happened was that in all of the manufacturers' companies, they would make some kind of a device on the lab bench, very, very sterile, very clean. They could get it to work without any kind of external influences. They could make a device. Then what happened was the device would get sold and get into the hospital. Everything changed. They didn't figure out that, well, the nurse or the physician might drop it from a foot, or someone might pee on it, or so many things can happen in the hospital environment. Manufacturers often did not take into account how the device was actually going to be used. So our company or research organization began to evaluate these devices in the clinical environment, in the hospital environment. Do they work? Are they prone to failure? Do they do what they're supposed to do? And the first product that I worked on was infant incubators. Now, infant incubators, well, you know, you have a premature infant. You put them in an incubator because they need to have supplemental heat to keep them nice and toasty. Problem was, some of these infant incubators were not designed properly and ended up, well, I use the term kind of flippantly, but actually causing death from overheating of infants.
Oh, my gosh.
Some things were not so serious, like making door latches where you have to open up every once in a while to go in and do a procedure on an infant. Some door latches were not made properly, and infants have been known to crawl out because they're kind of active, and they crawl out and they bounce on the floor. Well, the good thing about infants is that their bones are really not formed nicely, and so the events where the infants bounced on the floor were not serious. But you can imagine it ranges from not a serious problem to death. So I did quite a few products liability cases involving infant incubators and also infant radiant warmers. Now, these are devices that the infant is in a bassinet, and overhead there's a lamp or some kind of a heating element, and there's a thermometer or a thermistor that attaches to the baby's body and regulates the temperature or the amount of heat that the baby is getting. Well, one of the cases I got involved with, the nurse substituted, I don't want to blame the nurses because the doctors are in this too, substituted someone else's, another manufacturer's thermistor and put it in this one radiant warmer, and it was incompatible.
So what was it with thermistor? What is that?
It burned.
What is a thermistor?
Oh, a thermistor is an electronic device which enables the machine to measure the temperature of something. So you apply it, and as the heat of the body increases or decreases, it changes the characteristic of this little, it's just like maybe a half inch wide disc that goes attached to the body, and then there's a wire that then goes to a monitor which is able to measure actually what the temperature is on the body. And if the temperature goes up, then the machine tells the heating element to cool down.
So let me ask you this question. And, you know, I've actually seen your CV. And is it true? Because I've taken a look at it, and it said that you wrote some of the first United States performance and safety standards for these incubators and infant radiant warmers.
Yeah, the first. up until that time, up until 1976, when I began to work with this with the FDA, no one had developed any medical device standards. Not at all.
Wow, that's...
So I was the first one to develop standards for the performance and safety of infant incubators.
So let me ask you this question. Do you consider it to be important that in any industry and these different industry, different types of products, that there are standards to follow?
Oh, that's the first thing, Ken. When I get a case, you know, I go to the different standards setting bodies, and depending upon what the products are, there are different standards. I go there and I look, all right, what are the standards? And then I apply my observations of the device against the standards. Does it meet these standards? And many times I end up doing testing. I have a little laboratory and I test the, for example, this thermistor thing. I would put in different thermistors and see what happens, and so I, you know, measure temperature. This is all part of the science of biomedical engineering. So take measurements, take data, see if the device is performing like the specifications do, and if they don't, then ask why.
So let me ask you this question. You know, there's this thought now, and we're getting to another break, and we're going to bring you back in the last segment. But there's kind of this thought that, well, we're so now developed, everything's developed, so, you know, everything's computer developed and all that, that things can't go wrong with products. Is that accurate?
We open up the can of worms with these computers and intelligent design. I mean, all of these things, the more complex a device is, the more chance for there to be something that can go awry.
So I want to talk to you about that on the other side. Keep that thought, okay? And we will come back on the other side. We have Dr. Darrow on. I could tell already, folks, we're going to have to bring Dr. Darrow on for some more shows, because there is no chance we're going to cover all this ground, but it is fascinating. See you on the other side. Well, welcome back to our program. If you're just joining us, this is Personal Injury Attorney Ken Auerbach. You're on our program From No Fault of Your Own, and we are exploring some of the most important issues in personal injuries caused by accidents. If you or someone you care about has been injured as a direct result of someone else's negligence, please contact us at myinjuryli.com or call 631-654-4900. We really would be privileged to fight to get you justice. That's myinjuryli.com or call 631-654-4900. All of our personal injury consultations are free. If you do retain us, it's all on a contingency, so it doesn't cost you anything unless we make a recovery. Please listen to our program every Monday from 4 to 5 p.m. as we continue to explore these issues. So we are back with Dr. Darrow. Dr. Darrow, are you there?
Yes, I am.
Okay, so the last thing that you said was that just because there is, you know, more computers and things are more quote unquote advanced, that doesn't mean that there's less of a chance for something to go wrong. Is that a correct summarization of what you said?
That would be a correct statement. Analogous, I mean, to me, the analogy would be the dashboard on your car. There's so many gadgets and so many things that it can do, and the more sensors that you have, the more chance that there could be something that goes awry with these sensors. But before I carry this too far, know that the medical device industry is comprised of many very conscientious people that want to deliver the best product, and it's a competitive market. Sometimes that kind of gets in the way because you might want to have a rush to get to the market. It reminds me of the time that I did a case where there was this monitor that is supposed to measure the oxygen in a baby and for home use. So the parents had this baby and it needed to have a measurement of its oxygen. And if the oxygen fell below a certain level, an alarm would sound. The parents would go over and, you know, stimulate the child to keep the oxygen going. Well, what happened was that they shuffled across the rug and the static spark hit the monitor, and it damaged the circuitry within the monitor, unbeknownst to the mother and father. They went back to bed, and then in the morning they saw the infant was dead.
Oh, gosh.
Because it didn't alarm. Why didn't it alarm? Guess what? It was static discharge that caused it. Well, how did that happen? Did they design it properly? You talked about defects and design. Well, I went to the office where the attorneys that were supporting the parents were, and they had like 10 boxes of documents with regard to design. Unfortunately, there is a federal requirement that there be a good manufacturing design log, that everything that's done in a medical device is recorded. Well, I spent all day looking through, you know, thousands and thousands of papers, and I found one document. This was the smoking gun. It was the static discharge test. They specified in the existing standard at the time, I believe it was 10 kilovolts. They did all these tests. They could never show that anything higher than, I think it was 7 or 8 kilovolts would be safe. So what happened was they rushed it. They realized that it was a very competitive market. They had to get the thing out. Mm. And so even though it didn't meet the standard, they still put it out to market. While that one piece of paper was all it was to get the compensation that the parents needed, because it was in fact a defective device with a defective it was defective design. Was it design? It was designed according to the specs, but the specs were not adhered to.
Right.
So sometimes it gets a little complicated.
So, you know, it's interesting, and some of these are so sad. I mean, really, really sad, particularly with medical devices, and because, you know, you're dealing with a human being, right?
Yeah.
You know, it's one thing if the device somehow is going to cause financial trouble for someone or a company, and it breaks down and now someone loses money. Much different thing, right, when we're talking about the preciousness of life and a person who, whether it's a child or an adult, can be gravely affected by it. You know, we've had cases together, Dr. Dyra. We don't have a lot of time left on the show, but if you recall, we did several cases together, but at least I remember one case in particular. Yeah. It had to do with a MRI machine, and my client goes into the MRI machine, and they're in the machine, and all of a sudden, and they had been given actually a sedative, because there's a lot of people who go into the MRI machines that really are nervous with it, and they have claustrophobia. Sure. So they gave him a sedative, and he closes his eyes. And the next thing he remembers is he's got a terrible feeling of burning. I believe it was on the side of his leg.
Mm-hmm.
And I remember you took a look at that case, and we evaluated it. And I originally thought, well, it sounds to me like a person shouldn't go into an MRI machine and get burned. But again, it's not as simple as that. And I remember that we had to get you information. You had to do some analysis on that to see whether or not there was some type of defect. Is that correct?
That's correct. And often, Ken, often the first assumption that one makes can often be wrong. You can't jump to conclusions in any of these personal injury things. I'll give you one example. Someone called me and said this person got burned on this heating mattress. They were in bed and there's a mattress and there's something wrong with the heat produced by the heating mattress. Well, I looked at it and it was working fine. The heating mattress was fine, but the problem lay in something else, something that no one ever suspected. The problem lay in the fact that that heating mattress, prior to being placed on the bed on which the patient lay, was sterilized with ethylene oxide gas. Now, ethylene oxide gas is very caustic to the body, and after sterilization you need to air that stuff out before you can put it on the patient. This wasn't aired out, and so the ethylene oxide went right into the skin and caused severe burns. So you have to look at the whole picture. You can't just come to assume things. You've got to look at everything that that gets involved in the situation. So what you think might be the product that is defective could be another product, or could be something else, or it could be some use that the physician recommended or the nurse recommended.
Right. I mean, that's interesting too, right? So you can have a product that, if used properly,
correct,
then you won't have an injury, but it's possible that it wasn't used properly. Then the question becomes, was it not used properly because the individual was given proper guidance and didn't use it properly? Were they not given the appropriate guidance? So there's a lot that we look at when we do these cases.
Yes.
And what I really feel is so important is when these cases come to me, what I do is I obviously screen it to see, is there some type of an injury, a serious injury?
Yeah.
And then, you know, what I have to do is I got to call someone like Dr. Dyro. Anytime it came to any electronic medical device, that's who I would go to, because, you know, you'd call it straight. And, you know, I don't want to get involved in a case that there's nothing there. I'm going to spend, first of all, it's not legitimate if you're trying to kind of push on a case and you don't really have something. But in addition to that, it's very, very expensive. These cases are expensive. Someone like Dr. Dyro, his time is expensive. We have to make sure that the case has value and has significant value. So listen, we don't have any more time today, but we have to bring you back, Dr. Dyro.
Please, I would love it. There's so much to tell.
Oh gosh, I got to tell you. And so folks, if you do have any issues, whether it's with a product, a defective product, you're involved in an accident, medical malpractice, products liability, slip and falls, pretty much anything that you're seriously hurt as a result of someone's negligence, please pick up the phone, call us at 631-654-4900 or myinjuryli.com at 631-654-4900 or myinjuryli.com. We really would be privileged to fight for you and to ascertain whether or not you have a matter that should be compensated. All right, we'll see you on the other side. Actually, we'll see you next week. So have a wonderful week, folks.
The views and opinions expressed on this program are not necessarily those of this station, JVC Broadcasting Management, or its sponsors.